Hi, and welcome to At the Devil's Ball. I'm Samuel Numene, and with me as always is my co-host and founder of the feast, Nathaniel Johnson. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, school's out, weather's getting warmer, everybody's getting ready for the summer. You like camping?
I don't. I was actually going to ask you that. Did you ever go to summer camp, Sam? I never went to summer camp.
No, I never went to summer camp, and it always kind of seemed like a nightmare to me because I didn't really like the kids my own age. Being stuck with them 24/7 forever seemed like it was just a continuation of school, which I already didn't like.
Right.
And
right.
Now as an adult, I have an appreciation of nature, but from afar. I'd much rather go somewhere and hang out in nature and then go back to a hotel room, not shit in the woods. How about you?
Yeah. Actually, last summer, Lori and I went out to a cabin, basically. And I liked the cabin part.
Yeah.
And then she was like, we're going canoeing. And I was like, oh, I don't know. And then I was kind of a bitch about it the whole time. So
yeah,
we're going to have to go again just because I have to make it up to her. But yeah, like it was... I have a vague memory of like a church camp weekend thing when I was a kid, but I don't remember anything about it, only that I didn't like it.
Right.
So, you know, I never went to summer camp. No.
I was I went to a day camp one year for like the YMCA, but it was like in the city where I live. And so it was just like, you know, you're hanging out with a bunch of kids at the YMCA all day. We also did a 2-day camp. I think it was at the end of like fourth or fifth grade where like all the kids from the school could go to this place called Hiram House for a couple days. And that was fun, but it was like 2 days and it was already a little too long for me.
Sure.
And there's activities nonstop, but it was already like, okay, you know, my Super Nintendo's back over home. You guys are cool and all, but no.
Yeah.
So with that, we are going to be some unhappy campers all month because we're doing, you know, pretty much all camping movies. So, hooray! Yeah. But it inside.
Was the theme called Happy Campers or Unhappy Campers?
Unhappy Campers, but it doesn't really
unhappy.
Campers. Unhappy campers.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I thought we were being ironic. Okay.
No, it's Unhappy Campers, which ironically enough, I think we're the only podcast to do a camping month and not do any Friday the 13th yet.
True.
We're not doing Sleepaway Camp Unhappy Campers, which, you know, I realized that would have been an option, but no.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about it.
Yeah.
But no, we ultimately chose some different stuff. So, yeah.
So
we are basically doing what is more or less Friday the 13th Part 2.
Exactly.
But it's not Friday the 13th Part 2.
I still think it's the better.
Sam?
It is The Burning, 1981. Cult classic? I don't know. There's not a lot of fan base for this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of Tom Savini's early works that really, you know, helped him get his feet into the industry. 1981
was
a big year for him. He did this.
Yeah, he turned down Friday the 13th Part 2 to do this movie.
Right. He also did like The Prowler and Nightmare and a couple other movies this year, so it's a big Savini year. And that's where I first heard of the film was reading Savini's Grand Illusions book. I'm like, oh, I need to see this movie. Much later, we have seen it. And we're going to Miramax's first film. Do you want to take us into the vital stats and then we'll jump right into it?
I'm going to do them a little bit differently because I've got a thing I want to say coming up because I was going to say that I think Tom Savini's special effects in this movie are the second best thing about this movie. Mm. First best thing about this movie is something that I'm going to bring up in just a minute. But I want to put a spoiler alert before it. Mm. But because it is the best part of the damn movie. So this movie was actually made by a whole bunch of people who would go on to much bigger things. Like I said, we did mention Tom Savini did the special makeup effects for this film. Did you notice who edited it?
I did not.
Jack Sholder edited this movie.
Oh, yes.
So Jack Sholder, who would go on to direct Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Wishmaster 2, Alone in the Dark, he did quite a few films. This was actually after this, he would go on to do trailers for New Line, which is what ended up getting him the gig to work to do Alone in the Dark and then eventually Nightmare 2. So that's interesting. I noticed his name when I was watching the film last night. I was like, oh my God, Jack Shoulder. Okay. I knew he had come from editing.
Yeah, and he was friends. I think he was friends with Bob Shea even before this. But yeah, like this is, you know, where he cut his teeth and then went back to New Line.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, as you mentioned, this is the point, if not the first, I don't know if it was the first
Miramax. It is the first. It is the first? Absolutely the first, yeah. Okay. Before so, this, means... they were just doing rock promotions. The guy who's in jail, the guy who should be in jail. We're doing rock promotions.
I was gonna say I wrote it down as Harvey, mm-hmm. the evil Weinstein brother, mm-hmm. and Bob, the slightly less evil Weinstein brother, are both executive producers. I think one of them actually
worked on the script. Yeah, both of them worked on the script.
Yeah.
I just kind of want to run past them as fast as we can because that's
absolutely fucking because. Yeah, they're awful people.
Yeah.
So other than that, what do we got? We got the director of Tony Malam, mm-hmm. Writers Evil Weinstein, mm-hmm. And we've got Tony Malam and Brad Gray, who all worked on the film, all worked on the screenplay. And then we have we'll do the majors. We've got Brian Matthews as Todd. Mm-hmm. Brian Backer, who would go on to be in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. We have Lee Ayers as Michelle. Larry Joshua as Glazer. Ned Eisenberg as Eddie. We've got Carrick Glenn as Sally. Carolyn Houlihan as Karen. Fisher Stevens as Woodstock. Fisher Stevens, of course, would then go on to be in Short Circuit.
Yes.
And this is the point where, and we got Lou David as the villainous Cropsey. Now, this is the point that if you have not seen the movie The Burning, the best part about this movie is spot the really famous people. And one of them is very, very obvious. And one of them is you kind of have to like be looking for them to see them. But it is the best part of this movie is being like, holy shit, it's that person. So if you have not seen The Burning, this I want you to go watch The Burning. We'll wait. And then come back to this podcast and listen to us talk about the rest of the film. So go watch The Burning. We're waiting. And
are they done?
Okay,
yet?
You're back.
Okay.
Yeah, they're back. So this movie also has Jason Alexander, most famously of George Costanza from Seinfeld.
Right.
And given two lines of actual dialogue, is Academy Award winner Holly Hunter.
Yes.
As Sophie. It's literally it's still, even though I've seen the movie a few times, it's still the funnest part of the movie is trying to spot Holly Hunter in all the scenes.
I think Jason Alexander is the best part of this movie other than he's the absolutely of he's the one that comes closest to me liking him as a character.
Really? He's the only one you like? I actually think that some of these characters are pretty likable, and I think it's actually one of the strong point of The Burning.
Really?
But yeah.
I don't know. Like, every one of them seems like either kind of just a jerk or rapey or creepy. Well, I mean, the one guy's a creeper, you know. I mean, there's
Well, I mean, and yes, that's something. And as I've told you, as I mentioned the last couple, nowadays I've been doing like TV tropes Wikipedia research at work,
right?
And one of the things I've very much noticed, and we'll start with him because he's sort of set up to be a major character, but he's really not,
right?
Which is Alfred, Brian Backer. And nobody likes him,
right?
If anything you read on the subject of The Burning, everybody talks about, like, Alfred is set up to be a sympathetic character.
Right.
And there is nothing sympathetic about it.
Yeah, they start to set it up, but then they, you know, they skip right to him, you know, peeping on a woman, and then, you know, peeping
well,
on a
Well, that's his first thing.
Right, yeah.
His first thing is he peeps on a woman, which he then claims he was doing to get back at Glazer,
right,
the camp bully.
He also claims he was trying to scare her, which, yeah, somebody peeping out of the shower might scare you.
Yeah, but he was trying to scare her to make Glazer upset.
Right.
Which seems to be counterintuitive because it just makes Glazer want to beat him up more.
Right.
Glazer being the camp bully.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so his opening is he peeps on a girl in the shower.
Right.
Which, first of all, she's showering outdoors, which I would never.
Well, that's your only option.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
they're there for a month, and there's no indoor.
I was
going to
say at least Camp Blood in the Friday the 13th films had indoor friggin' showers.
Right.
They were in shacks.
Yeah.
All right. This one, for whatever reason, is wide open.
Well, there's
I guess
a lot
hope
of camp
rain to save water.
There's a lot of camp and RV grounds even these days that I think have outdoor showers with, you know, minimal privacy restraints.
Yeah, camp. I mean, yeah, that's like camp or RV, like, you know,
right,
stuff off the highway.
Yeah,
I mean, this is actually a summer camp that supposedly has funding.
Right,
you can put a roof on the thing. I mean, just go get some plywood and put up a friggin' roof. But anyway, yeah, so he's showering outside, and obviously the real reason the movie was made, because you got a girl showering. Mm-hmm. The camera is nice low angle, so we can see your breasts.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's very pervy. It is,
oh, God,
I think it's probably the perviest movie we have watched yet for At the Devil's Ball. But yeah, so the point is that he looks at her shower, she sees him, she freaks out. He runs off, he runs into Todd, the movie's hero.
Right.
And I like Todd.
Yeah, Todd's a pretty good guy, but I mean, I think that, was it Sally was the lead woman's name?
I get them
Michelle
confused.
Michelle I think
Michelle is the lead, yes.
Yeah, where she's like, you're going too easy, and I'm like, yeah, she should be kicked out of camp. You should have to go back, you know, home to Brooklyn or wherever, and,
probably, you know, yeah, and you. It's only informed later why he gives the kid a pass is because he ends up being we've got ahead of the story obviously already,
right.
But that he was actually partially responsible for the creation of the killer Cropsey,
right?
And so he believes in second chances. But he has a really good – and the thing is, she calls him a pushover, but the scene we see when he talks to Alfred, he's not that much of a pushover.
Right.
He begins with, like, he slams his fist on the table. He's like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Right.
And the kid then says, you know, I get picked on. I got no friends. You know, I'm acting out.
Right.
And he says, okay, you have a friend now. I'm your friend. Cut this shit out.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't. So, I mean,
yeah.
it's, you know –
And I know it was a year later, but he's almost in a way like a kind of a proto Friday 13th Part 3 Shelley character is the way he's first introduced, where he's like, oh, you know, I do this because nobody likes me. But then later he's just like, no, you're just a creep.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
Shelley is,
I mean, nobody likes
actually
you.
Was actually being true when he said that he does this shit because nobody likes him.
Yeah. And I think to a degree Alfred was too. But he just doesn't learn anything.
Right.
And then, of course, we immediately cut to, like, the other guys trying to be friends with him.
Right.
And, like, he's like, but I hate swimming. And I think Jason Alexander, as David, Louis says, not much you do like, huh?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Well, drown. He jumps into
right.
the water. But then they actually do come through for him.
Yes.
Glazer shoves Alfred into the water,
mm-hmm.
Which everybody agrees is a shitty thing to do.
Yeah.
And which is, again, one of those moments where we like David an awful lot, where he's like, what are you, crazy? You can't swim.
Right.
You know, like,
but we're
going to
take him out
of,
we're going to take him out a canoeing trip for 3 days too, but you know, that's,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
later.
Well, but if you watch that, even if you watch that canoeing scene, he's in between the two most experienced people.
Right.
On the
right.
Canoe. And the entire point was David's one of the strongest swimmers. So they were going out to teach him how to swim.
Yeah.
That was their entire point of going out on the dock in the first place when Glazer shoved him in.
Right.
Which is why David's really upset.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you shoved him in, he can't swim. And right. he does everything he's supposed to do. He brings him up, makes sure he's breathing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really fun scene, actually.
Yeah.
And then they get Woodstock goes and gets his BB gun and
right.
shoots Glazer in the ass while he's trying to impress the girls.
Right.
And what's funny too about that scene, and one of the reasons why I think these kids are a little bit more likable
mm-hmm.
than I think at first glance, is the girls are pretty pissed off at Glazer for being a jerk to Alfred. They're not happy with him for shoving the kid off of Doc.
Right.
They're like, that's a dick move, Glazer.
Yeah.
Even though as far as bullies go, Glazer's pretty low key.
Yeah.
He kind of like,
and you can even make a case that, you know, his antagonism towards, you know, him is justified after how we've introduced Alfred in the first place. I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Which is something I've read online. That's something we're talking about. Like, Glazer actually, you know, maybe Glazer had a point
mm-hmm.
in threatening Alfred.
But it's obvious, you know, that he was a bully
and
a kind of a jerk before
He was obviously picking on Alfred prior.
Right.
But one of the things that keeps coming up, of course, is also throughout the film where Alfred's staring problem.
Right.
You know, and he's staring at Glazer. And,
yeah.
And you know, and it's interesting. I was thinking about it last night. I'm probably reaching because this
mm-hmm.
was 1981.
Right.
But it's something that I've talked about on other podcasts, stuff like that, about, you know, when you start talking about queer coding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does Alfred have a crush on Sally, who doesn't have a crush on Glazer.
Right.
You know, and I keep coming around to that. I'm like, I think he's actually more interested in Glazer than he is in the.
Or he doesn't know what he's interested in. I mean,
he doesn't know what he's interested in.
It seems to me like maybe he's just interested in peeping. He just likes to peep.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I do believe him. I don't think he was thinking of it as peeping. I think that that's something that probably when someone pointed out to him, he was like, "Oh shit!" Right. But again, he doesn't learn anything.
No,
he only finds out Cropsey's killing people at the end of the movie because he decided to go watch Glazer and Sally have sex.
Right.
Which was, you know, the one thing he was told explicitly not to do.
Right.
And so Alfred, yeah, Alfred's not exactly the most sympathetic Lear kid. I mean, he's not Chris Makepeace in Meatballs.
Right.
You know, which is basically, I was thinking about this movie when I was watching it last night. I was like, this is basically Meatballs meets Friday the 13th.
Right.
Because there's a lot of time is given to camp antics.
Yes.
Which is a fascinating element, but I also think it was just because they knew they had a weak ass story. I mean, we don't really have a script here. We have tits and blood for some of this movie. Right. What else are we going to do? Well, we'll have the campers.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. I was thinking about it as well because I'm like, okay, where does this fall in the timeline of summer camp movies? And yeah, like really the big one right before this was Meatballs, like you said.
Yeah.
But a lot of these like were being produced and written at the same time. Like they claim to have written the script for this before Friday the 13th, but obviously they reworked it a little bit in after to kind of get on that success. Right.
Yeah. And clearly, yeah. And I mean, that's the only reason why you would hire Tom Savini at that point, right, too.
Yeah.
Like, well, we want you to make Friday the 13th again.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you brought that film to the forefront. So obviously, even if there was some sort of script about serial killer at summer camp.
Right. But then I was thinking about it and, you know, in New York, especially like I guess in like the 60s and 70s and 80s, like I looked into it a little bit, like that's what people did. They sent their kids off to summer camp. If you're like middle class, and you lived in New York, so you could get some nature in you, you know. There was a lot of like Jewish summer camps, which, you know, if you ever seen Wet Hot American Summer or Indian Summer, a lot of that's taken from that. So yeah, like you get all these city folk, you know, with their middle class people, and they'd send their kids off to summer camp for the while, and that also explains the Cropsey part of the story, because Cropsey is a big New York urban legend. Going way back, it started off both as a neighborhood tale. If you lived out near somewhere near like Willowbrook or something, they would say, "Oh, it's an escaped lunatic. He's running around getting kids. Come home when the lights come on."
Yeah,
but also at the summer camps, they would tell the story of like, you know, oh, Cropsey was this, you know, usually it was like a counselor or something like that who went crazy and is hiding in the woods. It's it's the same thing they used for Jason Voorhees later. I mean, I think,
and
this
of course,
was
Maniac, which was released the year after that,
right?
Which was Madman Mars, not Cropsey, but it was still basically Cropsey.
Yeah, I think
in fact, from what I remember,
it was based
on
the same thing.
Yeah, they wanted to call him Cropsey, and Mad Men and the Burning came out. They were
like,
we can't call him Cropsey now, so now he has to be Madman
like,
Mars.
Like, even originally, the original title of this was supposed to be, like, you know, the Cropsey Maniac or something like that. Like, and it was exactly like, you know. So I think this all just kind of came out of the ether at the same time, because all these people were growing up in the same kind of environment. And going on to make movies and stuff like that, you know, so. Because I spent a little bit of time trying to figure out exactly where this fell in the timeline, and I think it's so early that it has to be more than just being based off Friday the 13th, or more than just being based off Meatballs. Though obviously it's impacted by them, if not inspired.
Yeah. I mean, I might even believe they had a script. It's in 1978 or
right
before Friday the 13th came out.
But they're not
basically serial killer kills kids at camp. I mean, it's not exactly like Sean Cunningham was like, you know, Eureka, come up with the most genius idea. I mean, Friday the 13th was created to rip off Halloween,
right?
And he chose a summer camp because he had one,
right?
You know, he owned one already, so he's like, I can shoot there, you know. Or somebody to that effect. Somebody he knew owned one.
And
something.
Even Halloween itself is kind of based off of, you know, old urban legends that people would, you know, tell each other in, you know, suburban neighborhoods. It's not.
Yeah, the babysitter.
Right.
Yeah. Babysitter alone gets, you know, gets attacked by a guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, and then, by the way, the well-to-do New Yorkers still send their kids to summer camp.
Right.
Where I'm from in Maine. The Black Friday of the hospitality industry is called Camp Weekend.
Oh, shit. Weekend, yeah, where the parents go up and meet them. Yeah.
Yeah, and the camper, they come up. What happens is it's usually a two-punch, but the first one is usually parents bring the kids up to camp.
Right.
You know, in northern or central Maine. They then come back to Portland, Maine, the Maine metropolitan area, get a hotel room. For like $500 friggin' dollars, because everybody raises their prices 300%.
Well, of course.
Back in the day, anyway, you know, years ago when I first started, there were people who were being sent back to Boston because there were no rooms Portland, Maine, between in southern Maine and New Hampshire. There just weren't enough beds. Now Portland is, you know, there's no services for the homeless, but there's, you know, hotels. You know, there's a lot of hotels and condominiums. But it was the worst weekend to be working, and it was all hands on deck, and you guys couldn't get it off, because it would be, I got lucky once or twice at one or two hotels to be like, I don't have to work camp weekend.
Awesome. Sorry for any noise, but my dog really wants to be on the podcast today.
That's all right. But yeah, camp weekend, it's a nightmare.
These, I don't doubt it.
From New York come up and are angry about everything.
Of course. They're from New York.
But the idea is that they drop off their kids and then they go stay in Portland to go out and get drunk and party and then treat every single service industry worker like garbage.
Right.
But anyway, that's a side thing. That's me. I'm a hospitality guy.
I'm glad that that's still a thing, you know, that people do, because there's a lot of, you know, formative experiences that happen to these kids who go to these things, whether or not there's a killer on the loose or not. I think
I mean, as we both established, though, neither one of us had any interest in doing it,
right?
So but we were weirdos. We want, you know, what were we going to get out of it? We were just out being Alfred without the peeping,
hopefully.
With the peeping, I don't know.
Right.
You know, I was a different kid when I was 14. I don't know. Which, by the way, how old are these fucking people?
Well,
I was thinking about this today.
Like Jason Alexander and I think Glazer are like counselors.
Yes.
And you
are
know,
they though? I mean, they never established that. I was wondering if they were campers.
Jason Alexander is definitely coming from a position of authority, as weak and, you know, comedic as he is about it, I think. Obviously, the guy who tells the story of Cropsey is a counselor, because that's what the counselors do.
Well, right. Todd and Michelle and Eddie are all definitely counselors.
Right.
Everybody else, I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure Jason Alexander is a counselor as well. I'd bet money that Glazer is. He's just a shitty one. You know, we're coming at it ourselves as 43-year-olds.
Yes.
And I don't know about you, but I'm already hitting that age where anybody under the age of 21 looks 14 to me, and I can't tell the difference.
That's true. That is true.
You know, in these camps, you know, you have the counselors who are probably 18 or 19 working their first or second job in the world.
Played by 30-year-olds.
Yeah, often.
Yeah.
And I kind of meant in the real world, even. In the real world, you know, these counselors are, you know, 17 to 19 usually. And the campers are like 12 to 14. Not a whole lot of age difference if you look back at it. You know, most of these counselors are not natural leaders. They're just dumb kids who are trying to make money, too.
Sure.
So I can see why we're confused as to who exactly is a counselor.
Yeah. But what I mean is also, like, this is the one subgenre where the age of the characters actually matters, and it's, like, the one that never establishes
them. Yeah.
Like, if you have a high school movie, they're all in high school.
Right.
We know what age they are.
Yeah.
If they're in college, we know what age they are. Mm-hmm. But you have a summer camp movie where counselors and maybe campers are hooking up.
Yeah.
Age matters there.
Right.
Not to the Weinsteins. Ayo.
I did notice on this watch through that the character Tiger, the woman who's playing softball and goes off into the woods and almost gets murdered.
Yeah,
I'm like, girl, that is too young for the camera to be lingering the way it is on you.
Yes, yeah.
And I looked and she was like, you know, 16. I'm like, that's not not cool, guys. Come on.
Right. But we have like
now I feel like Alfred, you know?
Right. Exactly. But you have like the relationship between Eddie and Karen.
Right.
You know, where he's trying to get her into bed and she's like, I'm kind of afraid of him, but at the same time, I kind of like him.
Right.
Which does lead to one of my favorite lines, actually, after she's bumped off and they wake Eddie up, Todd and Michelle wake him up. And he's like, we had a fight. She wandered off. You know, what's your problem? You know, I don't know what her problem is. And Todd actually just goes like, she probably it's because she likes you, you dumb bastard. And, I love that line.
Jason Alexander also is the guy who goes to town and gets, you know, the porno mags and the bag of condoms. So although he could have a fake ID or just know the one store that doesn't.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm like, I firmly believe that a husky guy who is actually 16 could probably go to a town convenience store and convince them that he's
18. I feel like if I were a store owner, I'd be a little leery when somebody, you know, has a list of all the nudie magazines he has to bring back. But, you know, maybe that's a regular occurrence. It is 1981. There's no internet.
I've never worked for a pornographer or anything, so I don't know.
That side of the counter, right? Yeah.
It is just weird that I'm like, half of these people, I don't exactly know what their roles are.
Right.
Because also, like, in the big, there's a big sequence in the mess hall where the camp director, who I think has never given a name, starts doing his speech. We see that Todd and Michelle are sitting near him. Eddie's sitting there away from everybody else with like where the director is. Mm-hmm. But Glazer and David and Sally and the other one, Karen, are all sitting with the other campers.
Yeah, so but I'm they're
like, are they campers?
Well, but, I mean, I'm just making guesswork on the few movies I've seen featuring campers, but aren't there also like, you know, counselors that are basically the cabin leader. They're the ones who keep in charge of the kids in each of the individual cabins.
Yeah.
And then there's like, you know, the guy who does the nature trail shit, the guy that's in charge of the sports shit, and the guy, you know.
Yeah.
I suppose it doesn't matter at the end of the day.
No, not really. Not really. It's just something of those things where I'm like, well, these people are having sex, and I'm like, is one of these a counselor and one of them a camper? Because that's a little weird.
Right.
But it was written by a Weinstein.
Right. So, and then it was 1981 and they were
it was 81
close to being the same age. So it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like Cropsey was nailing the people, you know. Although we're not sure Cropsey's deal was other than that he was a jerk.
He's just
and maybe a little slow. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like, there is I forget what I was gonna say. It was I can't remember.
1981 also probably explains
why. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
All these kids are smoking.
Yeah.
In their cabins. They're passing around joints and cigarettes and stuff. And I'm like, oh, 1981.
Yeah.
You know, they're all 16 smoking a cigarette. Right. It's just a fascinating relic of a bygone era.
Right.
Which most of this movie is. In fact, most slasher films I think made in like the late 70s, early 80s are. And you couldn't make this movie today, at least not in the same way.
Well, no, that's what I was about to say earlier. You know, we were trying to figure out why they would bring the kid out on the canoeing trip because, we're looking at it from 2021 and thinking, well, that's a safety issue. But back then, they're like, he'll be fine.
He'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have him hold the backpack full of rocks. Who cares? You know?
Yeah. 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 I mean, well, like I said, I think even in that scene, they do show that he's right between Todd and Michelle.
Yeah.
He's with the two safest people.
Right.
You know, the head counselors. I guess we should just maybe back up to the beginning of the film.
Right.
Where we have the most convoluted prank ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Even back when I was trying to remember the movie, because I was talking with Terry about it over the weekend. And, you know, we were talking about The Burning, and I didn't realize until I watched The Burning this week that I remembered the prank rug. I thought they were just throwing firecrackers in his room, which would make a lot
Oh,
more sense.
that would make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Yes. Because what they do is they go in and they put a skull
Right.
with candles on it,
Yes.
and they put it in his room. He's drunk and passed out, and then they bang on his window. He wakes up, and for some reason, the guy decides to just have a whole seizure
Right.
over it, and drops the skull,
That's how I wake
knocks the
up.
skull down. Yeah, knocks the skull onto his bed, which then sets on fire, and then it jumps into an open gasoline can that he had on the ground, and that explodes.
Right.
And he runs out and screaming and doing
And
his
burning.
and burning,
Yes.
the burning.
Yes.
Yes, it is the burning. But yeah, and so then he goes he falls into the pond.
Right.
He's taken to the hospital. 5 years later, they're like, the skin grafts never
Six
took.
months.
Yeah.
It's 6 months later, and then it's another 6 months after that, which is. It's been 6 months.
Is
They
it?
have, yeah. There's a title card
Huh.
that says 6 months later. I'm like, you guys haven't given him any skin grafts by now? It's like,
Well,
he's
the
not even.
voiceover does say, yeah, the voiceover says skin grafts didn't take.
Right.
Yeah.
I just feel like Kane Hodder would have some notes on this film if we had him watch it with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because yeah,
But
they're not
yeah,
training him.
no, and of course the first thing we see of him in the hospital is basically like an orderly being like, man, you ain't never gonna believe the weird burned freak that's in this
Right.
ward. And I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Okay, pal. Max from Nightmare 3, you're not.
Right.
But yeah, it's like it's one of those things again that and this movie is we didn't talk about this yet. I wanted to actually bring it up when we were doing
Well, let's get through the beginning
intro.
first, and then we'll get into the next thing.
Okay.
So you were saying that, yeah, the orderly seems to be the worst orderly in the world, bringing this new guy in.
Yes.
It's like, we're not sure if this guy's supposed to be an orderly or what. This other
Yeah.
guy. But he's like, yeah, you got to check out this freaking Ward C. I'm like, how do you have a job? And then,
Been working there 10 years.
yeah, and then we have, you know, a jump scare for no reason other than it's a jump scare.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden it cuts again to like 6 months after that or something, where he's escaped and he's just wandering
He's let
around town.
go.
Yeah, he's okay. That's right. Because they did have a thing about like, oh, you're gonna have trouble, you know, readjusting to society. People are gonna look at you weird. And they immediately go to like this weird like Italian horror movie thing where he's just killing a prostitute for no reason. I mean,
In a pretty nasty way.
yeah,
That death scene's pretty nasty.
right,
He shoves a pair of scissors into her belly,
yeah.
and we see the night it twist. Tom Savini doing some very realistic work there.
Yes, and it's
And which
shot and
is what I
edited very
wanted,
well.
which was the next thing I wanted to jump onto, which was also I think that so far on The Devil's Well, this is probably our nastiest movie we've
Yeah,
done. It's a pretty nasty little film.
I had mentioned, you know, disliking Halloween 6 for being a nasty, you know,
Yeah.
mean-spirited film, but it's not because I don't like nasty and mean-spirited
Yeah.
films. It's just because it didn't fit with the series. This is. Aside from literally being one of the first video nasties in the UK,
Yeah. Yeah.
it is a nasty piece of work. It's not a very pleasant movie. It's not meant to be.
Yeah. And that's what I think is I wanted to point out is this was a video nasty, and it's
Right.
our first video nasty. We're getting so big.
Yes.
But yes, so the video nasties, if you're not familiar out there, was basically in 1984, a woman named Mary Whitehouse, who was a morality crusader in England, gained a lot of support from the local conservative government. And basically, they created the Video Recording Act, which was sort of like the MPAA, but way more hardcore.
Yeah, they had
Because,
teeth.
yeah. And basically, every movie then had to be screened through the Video Recording Act, and classified. If it was not classified, the movie was not released at all in England. And The Burning was among them. There were, I think, 74 total
And
films.
of the movies that were already released, if they didn't hit that, you know, if they didn't get
They
the
were
approval,
recalled.
they were recalled and it was illegal to buy them, sell them, or own them.
Which, of course, backfired because every single, like, 14-year-old kid would then go to their local video store and buy the friggin' movie.
Even now, the Video Nasty is used, used like a list of movies that I need to see, even if, you know, a good portion of the films on the list are just awful. Not in the fun way. Like, they're just bad movies.
Yeah, and a lot of them are just kind of vile.
Right, you know, and I think this is the borderline. Which isn't my thing. This is the borderline, I think, between...
I can handle the burning.
Right.
I can handle the burning, even though, and as we'll get to, there's some really, really nasty sequences in it. Predominantly, again, punishing people that probably don't deserve it.
Right.
But they, you know, Cannibal Pharaoh, I'm like, you know, I don't need that movie.
Right.
But it is funny because also like Contagion. Mm-hmm. Which is was recently done by Rift Trax, otherwise known as Alien Contagion, was a Video Nasty.
Yeah,
and it's so tame,
right?
And so ridiculous. Just to give you an idea of what that range was, which was it was basically some movies that really probably didn't deserve it, to movies that probably did deserve it, to the burning,
somewhere in the middle. Even the ones that deserve it, you know, should be allowed to be released. I mean,
I agree. A lot of them aren't worth watching, they exist. But it was an interesting little piece of history there for you, which The Burning was a movie that was banned, in England,
and it was hard to come by in the States for a while too, because I think Miramax, Miramax didn't really want, much like Holly Hunter. I don't know if Miramax wanted to always be known for doing that. For a while it was hard. And it's hard to come by again digitally, but that's a whole other thing. But, you know, like I said, I'd read, you know, Fangoria growing up. I'd read Grand Illusions 1 and 2, which is Tom Savini's, you know, special effects books a lot growing up. Yeah. I didn't see The Burning until I was like 21 because I couldn't get a copy of it. I mean.
Yeah, I remember I saw it in high school.
Right.
It was at the local video store. But I watched it. And then I watched it again, probably for the first time, just a couple of years ago.
Right.
And I was like, and it was basically like watching it the first time because I was like, I really didn't remember anything about that movie, other than Jason Alexander was in it.
Right.
Which is why I said like the best part of the movie, I think, is Spot the Holly Hunter. Because like
even that when I was watching it, I was watching it earlier today. Like I was kind of looking to see if she had any lines, other than, you know, because I heard. She had like two, and I watched her, and I kept forgetting like where she was in the scene. Like she's just not a presence.
Yeah, yeah, she isn't, and I think she's actually because I think there's actually group scenes she's not in.
Mm-hmm.
I think like we talked about the canoe scene where they're all like canoeing and they're splashing each other for what seems like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
because they just kept rolling that camera.
Right.
I don't think Holly Hunter's on any of those canoes. I watched. I was like, is she on there? I don't see her. Yeah. We don't see her until the fire circle.
Right.
When he tells the story about Cropsey, then we see her clearly, and then she has a line after the canoes are gone, and Todd says we're gonna go try to find the canoes, and we'll find her. And she said, and she goes, "What if we're down?" You know, and it's very Holly Hunter, and I to the point where I riff to myself alone in my living room, Holly, who gave you a line?
I kind of wonder if her weird accent was part of the reason she didn't have lines, but I don't know.
It's possible. Yeah. I don't think she had she was really a thing yet. I mean, I think it took a long time for her to become an actor, a major actor.
Because they give more to the girl who played, you know, Tiger than they do to her, and you know she's really really good. I guess she came off of doing Annie on Broadway before this. So like she kind of looks like Annie.
This is literally the first appearance of Holly Hunter.
Yep.
She would have a couple of TV movies until finally starring in Raising Arizona.
Right.
6 years later.
It takes a while to get a career together.
Yep. Yep. But it's interesting because we were going to, and I kind of mentioned this on social media after we did Blade Runner last week, that I kind of wanted to talk about Daryl Hannah, who also got her start in a low budget slasher movie called Mutilator.
Yeah.
Which
is also fucking terrible.
Yeah, but she had made it like the year before Blade Runner.
Right.
Like it was the next movie she did was Blade Runner. And then from Blade Runner, she did Splash and she was a star.
Right.
But yeah, it's always funny to watch these old horror movies because you never know who you're going to spot.
Yeah.
And so I remember, but 2 years ago when I watched this movie again, I went, wait a minute, is that Holly Hunter? And I'm like, that can't be Holly Hunter.
Right.
And then I'm like, oh, it's definitely Holly Hunter. And then I looked it up and went, yep, Holly Hunter.
Yep.
But yeah, it's, so I mean, it's definitely, I think this is like the fun part of this movie is just being like, holy shit, there's Holly Hunter.
Right.
But yeah, to my point about it being kind of nasty, we'll circle back around. Mm-hmm. One of the things, and I mentioned this at the beginning of the movie, beginning of this podcast, you had mentioned, these characters being unlikable.
Right.
And I felt that right before they're killed,
mm-hmm.
almost every single major character is given a likable moment.
Right.
And then they're killed.
That's a kind of
laser.
That's a trope that I think has recently been more popularized by The Walking Dead. I know a lot of people point that out.
Right.
They're like, oh, this character just had some character moments. They're dead.
Yeah. But I mean, we have in order, we've got what's her name? I'm getting them confused. Not Sally, but Karen.
Right.
Karen goes with Eddie out to the lagoon. Eddie wants to go skinny dipping.
Right.
Convinces her he's not going to try anything. When he tries to do something, she spurns him, takes off, and we're kind of like, good for you, kid. And then
she's dead.
Scropsy has thrown all of her clothes all over the woods, and she's all vulnerable and upset, and he kills her. And then we even get Eddie's kind of a jerk about it, but then when he's on the raft, one of the girls says, well, what happened to Karen? And you can see the actor gives us a little performance that he feels guilty.
Yeah.
Where he's like, look, you know, we had a fight. Hope she's okay. And then he gets the most brutal death, in theory, the most brutal death in the entire film.
Right.
Which is the Kevin Bacon in the cabin
reverse
gag on a casino, on a canoe.
Right.
Instead of, because you could see his head is in a sleeve and he's underneath the canoe and then they poke it into the fake. He pokes the shears into the fake neck, which is what they did with in Friday the 13th 1 with Kevin Bacon,
right?
Where he was just in a bed and then they shoved an arrow up through. But yeah, it's Cropsy also massacres like four or five other innocent people,
right?
Who had nothing to do with anything, most of which were again campers, underage campers.
Which I think works to their favor of the film in a little way because And this is obviously it's a very early slasher film, so the rules weren't defined as much as they became later. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, a good guy or a bad guy, you're gonna die. And I like the fact that Cropsy's just, you know, he's opportunistic, but he's not passing any sort of judgment like some of these films kind of imply in later entries. And the big raft massacre, I think, is a standout moment in slasher films because it's just like,
I agree.
How often do you see that? Like, he just pops up, he's like, you're all dead, you know?
Yeah. This guy can teleport, too, for some
reason.
But, yeah, he...
But he learned that from playing Friday 13th, the game.
Yeah. He kills, like, six people in that one scene.
Right.
In a quick massacre. Including the film's signature shot, which is on the cover of every VHS or Blu-ray, which is him silhouetted against the sky with
the
shield.
I guess the director did that shot. He was Cropsy that shot because he couldn't get anybody else to pull that shot off the way he wanted it.
Yeah.
I was listening to his commentary track earlier today. I'm like, I guess a lot of the shots where the light glints off the big Alone in the Dark video game garden shears. Clock Tower. I'm sorry. Clock Tower was the one that had the big scissors. I'm dating myself with video game references. I'm sorry.
I got no idea what you're talking about. So.
Clock Tower was in a survival horror series where the killer had these giant scissors and chased you around.
Why?
Anyway.
Never mind.
But I guess the director was actually the person holding the garden shears in a lot of those shots because nobody else could figure out how to glint the light off of them the right way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which it's good he did because I think it adds a lot of value to the film. I'm not being sarcastic with that. I think it makes the film look a lot better. I mean,
oh no, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. And like I said, the second best thing about this movie is Tom Savini's makeup effects because they're great.
Yeah,
they look great.
Savini
was at his best here. He was doing some really great murder stuff here.
Yeah.
All based on his, obviously everybody knows that Tom Savini was a combat photographer.
Right.
All of his stuff is based on like really horrible shit he saw in Nam. You know, and so he tried to bring that authenticity to everything he did, and these kills are brutal.
Right.
Very brutal
stuff. And this is where he started, outside of, you know, working with George Romero and Dawn of the Dead, where he could work with him and tell him the right way to shoot this. Like, in this movie, the director, you know, really did let him say, here's how we need to shoot this for it to look right.
Yeah.
Which is as much of a Savini staple as, you know, his effects themselves, is that he knows the right way to shoot them, the right way to cut them, and the right way to make them look real on camera. I mean,
yeah,
he didn't invent special effects, but he popularized the thing of, you know, having a real person in the scene with the effect. You know, if we could have a real hand come up into the frame, or if we could have a real head, but, you know, have the neck be fake, it looks so much better. Right. And he knew how to shoot those the right way. And the director listened to him here.
Yeah. But then, so after the Raft murder, we then get Glazer, who goes out with Sally, and underperforms.
Yeah.
He finally gets her to sleep with him. He's done in half a second.
Oh, we all been there, bro. Don't feel bad.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't think there's anything worse you can hear after sex than, is that it?
Yeah.
Ouch. All right. but then she's a really nice girl and says, like, we can try again later.
Right.
She's still kind of into him. And he's so moved by this that he's like, I'm going to go get matches. I'm going to build a fire. And he wants to turn this into a romantic evening,
right,
which is very unlike Glazer.
Yeah.
So, it shows the humanity to Glazer, where, first of all, bad in bed.
Right.
Which gives us a whole other insight into why he might be, he's overcompensating.
Right.
But he actually really cares about her and wants to actually, like,
salvage the evening.
Yeah. He wants to give her something. And then she's killed.
Right.
And then he comes back and he's killed, followed by Alfred, who watches it.
And that's my favorite kill in the movie, when Glazer's? He's killed. Yeah. Where he lifts him up and carries him across the forest and nails him to the tree. That's a fun kill.
Yeah, it is a really fun kill. And then the movie kind of falls apart.
Right.
After that point, anyway. Including, like, really awkward editing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you noticed when you were watching it. Anyway, what happens then is Alfred runs back to the camp, wakes up Todd. Todd doesn't believe him.
His peeping face came in handy finally.
Yes,
that's his power, and they used it for good, I guess.
Yeah. He says, comes back and he tells him Glazer's dead,
right?
Not Sally.
Yeah.
But he says Glazer's dead. Todd actually, to his credit, actually decides to take that seriously enough to go look.
Right.
And then Alfred runs off and leaves Todd to die.
Yeah.
But what happens is then the movie, it goes in two different directions, which is basically they salvage the raft.
Right.
Michelle and David lead the rest of the kids back to the camp, which is, again, it was one of those weird things about this movie that you think David would be a bigger deal.
Right.
But he does nothing going into the halfway through the second act. He's pretty much done.
Right.
He paddles the raft back.
Yeah.
You know, or helps. So we're basically left with the Raft people get back. At the same time, Todd has stayed behind to find Alfred,
right,
which I would never, but...
And that's the responsible thing to do, yeah.
I would, yes. Yeah, of course I would, but yes. Although, in all logic, Alfred's dead. Yeah. But, okay, Todd, go hunting for him. Then Todd finds an old...
copper mine?
copper mine.
Yeah.
Which was never established once in the film. There's just a copper mine. Now, from what I've read, it's because they wanted it to be a cave, and the first cave was infested by bats.
Right.
And then the second cave caved in.
Right.
And so they found that while shooting, they found this little copper mine, so we'll film here.
Right.
But suddenly there's a copper mine. The Cropsey's hunting Alfred through the copper mine. Todd's trying to find both, I guess.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, like, there's this, I'm getting the names mixed up, Karen's body.
Right.
But it's not Karen's body. It's a still photo. It's a
still photo of her, yeah.
Of her body.
Yeah.
And very obviously a still photo of her body. There's a weird shot, and it's really bad editing.
Right.
Where Todd is clearly in a standing position holding an axe, but then there's a shot of him picking the axe up off the ground. underhanded, as if he's lying prone and picking up the axe. And I was like, well, what? I thought he already had the axe. Like, what's going on in that movie? And all of a sudden, you have no idea what direction anything is, where anybody is.
Do you want to know? Do you want to know what's going on there? It's in jail and should be in jail. We're basically fighting with the director over the editing, and they kind of locked him out of the room for the final. At least according to the director and the commentary. And that kind of
Jack Shoulders is going to do what he's told.
Well, even he wasn't really cool with that, because he was like, you know, my job is to work for the director, not the producers. But you know, at the end of the day, he lost that battle.
I love making fun of Jack Shoulders. I mean, Jack, if you're listening,
love your work.
Come on the show. Yeah, come on the show. We'll talk about Wishmaster 2. Or Alone in the Dark, whatever you want.
Go back and do Nightmare 2 again with you if you want, buddy. I don't care. Yeah.
Jack Shoulder, come on. Right? Jack Shoulder, come on the show. But Jack Shoulder's never going to listen to this. But Jack.
Yeah, we're just as likely as to get at him as Jason Alexander, I feel. But, you know, why not try?
Well, I mean, Harvey, don't call us.
No.
There's just a lot of really awkward editing. And probably the worst killing of a psychopath ever in a film, I think. I think it's really lousily done. I can kind of buy Alfred, like, you know, gaining the strength to come to Todd's rescue. He stabs him in the back with the shears.
Right.
And then they kind of like, Cropsey grabs, Alfred.
Right.
And then, even though Cropsey isn't really holding him, Todd yells, "Alfred, duck."
Right.
And then Alfred sort of teleports across the room.
Right. He learned that trick from Cropsey.
Yeah, and then Todd digs the axe in his head. Mm-hmm. And then for some reason, there's a flamethrower.
Right.
Well, Cropsey brought that. Not had, probably.
Yeah, he just brought it. He just had it. You know, why the hell not?
Somewhere. Yep. And so he has a brain, but then he puts it out to fight Todd.
I don't know if you've ever been to a copper mine. They're like lousy with flamethrowers.
Yeah.
There's more flamethrowers in a copper mine than there is in an undersea laboratory.
I figured it was just upstate New York.
That was a Leviathan throwback.
I understood.
Give me something. Don't just say. Is that it?
Is that it?
Yes, that's it.
All right. I understood the joke. That there are flamethrowers under the ocean too. Cropsey is a flamethrower for some reason. And then they set him on fire with it after they've already stabbed him, cut off his head, or whatever. And it's that point, too, where even though we've all figured it out, everybody knows, but it's that point we have the flashback that reveals Todd was one of the guys who set Cropsey on fire.
Right.
And I'm like, we probably could have mentioned that a while ago.
I don't feel like it was even necessary. I mean,
it's probably not.
It's a different camp, even. I mean, it's who cares? It's just. It was Camp Blackfoot at the beginning, and they're like, oh, that burned down, and now it's Camp Stonewater, I think it was called.
Okay.
Yeah, Stonewater.
All right.
Yeah, if it weren't for title cards, like, saying it, you'd never know. It's unnecessary. Yeah.
And I guess I just didn't even notice the title cards. No. I don't know. And so then we cut to no resolution.
Right.
We've got a bunch of kids around a campfire telling the story of Cropsey. Which, from what I've read, has caused some people to believe that the movie never happened. It's just the story being told, which I don't think I buy. I don't think I buy that. I think it's probably just enough time has gone by that the legend has continued.
Well, when taken in context of them saying it earlier in the film and using it as a gag, which Friday the 13th, didn't that happen in Friday the 13th Part 2 as well? Like, just completely independent of this?
It happens in every movie.
Right.
It happens at the beginning. I watched the beginning of Mad Men right after the burn.
Yeah.
And it begins with the campfire tale with guy jumps out of the dark.
Well, like I said, that's a trope of the experience, I guess. You know.
Yeah.
But when taken in context of you have that happen before the main plot starts to happen in the film, at least with the killings.
Yeah.
You've already seen him around the camp at that point.
Yes.
He hasn't done much, but he's there. So yeah, I think this is
yeah, he doesn't
this
do
happened.
Anything for
this happened,
50
but it just furthers the legend, and you know that's I can see where the fan theory comes about, but I don't think there's a lot in there that really says that. But I guess at the end of the day, it doesn't matter one way or the other if it happened or not.
I thought I read there was another version that didn't have that there was a resolution, but I don't know. I can't find much on it.
I've never seen a different version than this, but it's possible. And I think that's it kind of feeds into what I was going to say about this being started to being produced before even Friday 13th came out, is that I think that a lot of the problems in the third act, and this I'm totally going on my own, nothing, I couldn't find anything that said this. I did look, but I could, like, I think a lot of the problems with the third act and even some of the underdeveloped stuff with, like, the peeping and the character stuff feeling like it was cut out, never actually shown, might have been because they were trying to turn a more of a thriller script into a slasher script. Maybe they were trying to, you know, not have it be a body count movie, but be something more akin to, like, you know, a Psycho or something like that, where it's eerie things happening. It would make more sense with Alfred and Cropsey being kind of parallels, but that being kind of dropped, where they're both kind of they both like to be voyeurs. I don't know. I'm just stabbing in the
even,
dark here.
You know, it's funny you say that, because even though I'd seen the movie before, part of me even kept expecting, I guess in my 21st century mentality, that they would ultimately reveal there was no Cropsey, it's just Alfred.
That would have been cool.
Which I think, if Hollywood were to be like, remaking The Burning, it would turn out there is no Cropsey, it's Alfred. And even though when I thought about that, I actually thought about The Burning and realized you could remake this movie really easily.
Yeah.
In the modern era, the only thing you'd have to add would be basically, it is a summer camp, they're going on canoes. Right. So they would say, no cell phones. Right. Todd's got the only cell phone.
Yeah.
And then all you do is, it's the same thing with the canoe, is that, like, the phone is smashed. Who did that? Did you do it, Alfred? No. Did you do it, Glazer? No.
Well,
we don't know who goes.
I'll tell you, with the cell phones, my niece is going to summer camp this summer. She's going into the 10th grade in the fall. But she had gone to a summer camp once before for, like, music, like for chorus, you know, choir kind of stuff. And they had a no cell phones policy. Like, they took your cell phones and you could use them, like, you know, twice a day at, you know, times. So yeah, it's
I figured as much.
Entirely plausible that they would take all that shit away.
That's what I mean, is all you do is add the convention that Todd has one working cell phone on the canoe trip, and then it's smashed, and then we don't know who smashed it. And then the only thing I would probably would change would then be, you'd have to just establish the friggin' mine. And in fact, I thought about how you could do it. I was like, oh, well, how do you establish the mine? It's where they found the wood for the damn raft. We found this place. There's wood. We made a raft. We found it all in this old mine. you have a mine for your finale. But yeah, it's.
I'm really surprised they didn't try to just have it at the ruins of the old camp. I mean, that's the part that I never understood. Like,
maybe that was them trying to avoid Friday the 13th comparisons.
Or it could have just been a budget thing. They didn't want to burn down a camp.
From what I've read, it was just simply they found that place while shooting.
Yeah.
So they decided to shoot the finale.
Because even in the earlier, when they were trying to get a cave before that, you know, because they knew there were caves in the area.
And I think this had two caves, but they didn't work. Yeah.
Right. I think this had like a $1.5 million budget, which is decent for a slasher film, but it's not a whole lot to work with.
No. But I mean, just reshoot one friggin' scene.
Right.
You know, by the way, there's a mine. Right. But yeah, it's.
Or even like have the counselor be like, you know, hey, you know, we have markings at the edge of our property of where to stop going in the woods because there's fucking mine shafts, you know.
There's a mine out there. There might be flamethrowers. We don't
know. Right. Yeah, tons of them.
There are tons of flamethrowers out there. There's a whole pile of them. Don't go out there.
It's the only way to deal with those deer ticks. It's just flamethrowers.
Yeah, flamethrowers. Yeah. Actually, that was a joke I made to myself during the softball scene at the beginning of the film, where she goes out to find the softball. And she comes out, she's like, I found the softball. And I'm like, yeah, along with a whole bunch of ticks and chiggers.
Yeah.
You know, I'm now completely covered in insects. Right. From stumbling around and looking for an object I absolutely did not need to find.
I always get weird when people in movies are like going through the woods in like shorts and shirt sleeves. I'm like, you need to cover up your at least your legs, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You're going to come home just be a mass of bites.
I hate going out for a cigarette and there's a damn cobweb.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, you know, I'm like, oh, God, yeah. There's bugs in my hair. What's left of it? Right. And you know, but I'm like, you know, so I'm like watching people like, I'm going to go out in the woods. And I'm like,
why? What's out there?
For a softball?
Right.
I mean, like, there's another, they even say, we have another softball.
Yeah, right.
She's like, I'll find it. And I'm like, why are you finding it? It's just a softball.
Or maybe it was like the softball game is the same as like the hockey game from Clerks where like, you only brought one? What the hell?
Yeah, you brought one puck. Yeah. Yeah, right. Also released by Miramax.
Yes.
So we have come full circle on that. So we are coming up on the hour mark. Any last thoughts on The Burning?
If you like slasher movies and you're into, you know, good slasher special effects, I'd say it's worth checking out. Mm-hmm. If you're into summer camp horror movies, there's better ones out there. This one has a... Even Friday the 13th, like, they hardly ever have an actual functioning summer camp. It's only by part 6. That has a functioning open summer camp.
That's true. Yeah. All the other films, in all the other Friday the 13th, it's always them building the camp. Right. Well, ready the camp.
Yeah, the first one was them building the camp. The second one was them being a camp to train camp counselors, which is just ridiculous. I did make a rather sharp statement online that I think this is the better Friday the 13th part 2, and I stand by it for the most part.
I disagree with you, but yeah.
I'm really into this. It actually being at a summer camp for a change.
There's no Ginny in this movie.
Yeah, well, that's the flaw. They're Ginny and the prankster character, the redhead. I can't remember his name off the head of my head, but he's really good.
Yeah.
It's bog standard.
So Amy is this. Steele wins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a nice
Amy
lady.
Amy Steele wins. Yeah. But yeah.
I like to say at least one, you know, really stupid thing per episode, and that's my hit for this one.
No, I mean, I think you, I mean, yeah, you could, I think an argument could be made that this, I mean, and like I said, this basically is Friday the 13th,
right?
Too, let's be honest.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically taking the plot of Friday the 13th and doing it again.
Right. But if you want a better slasher set at a summer camp, go see Sleepaway Camp. I think the characters, the kid characters are more realistic in that. It's better at being nasty than this is even, in a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways. Yeah. 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 I mean, I guess my final thoughts on The Burning would be I don't want to get off on a tangent here on this, but it was something I was thinking about last night, which is people talking. People talk a lot about, you know, they don't make them like they used to.
Right.
You know, I miss the, you know, people kind of miss that feeling of like 1979, 1981,
right.
Nasty little slasher movies that kind of look like garbage. And I'm kind of like, I don't know if I see the appeal. I mean, I understand the nostalgia appeal.
Right.
You know, there was something to the idea of renting The Burning when you're 15.
Yeah.
And watching it in the middle of the night, you know, in your parents' basement, right, or what have you. But outside of that, I mean, I think The Burning is actually, I think, in all honesty, is a fairly forgettable movie.
Yeah. I agree.
It's not bad. And like I said, there's some brief moments, I think, of some actual, like, really interesting characterization. Mm-hmm. Like I said, every single character, I think, right before they're killed is given a moment that we're like, oh, we might actually care. Oh, no, they're dead.
Right.
Oh,
look at you. You're a person after all.
You are a person after all. You spent the rest of the movie kind of not doing that at all. But right. Now you are a person, and now you're killed. Right. Which is a pretty smart idea.
Yeah.
I mean, like...
Let's be honest.
Yeah, and if you give them too much characterization, then you have all... You get too invested in,
and you add a lot of time. I mean, the slasher movie can't be 2.5 hours long. It's
no,
it's not built for that.
No, but when you talk about like April Fool's Day, which did a better job, I think, of developing characters really quickly.
Yeah,
To the point where we actually are kind of invested in their relationship. To the point where they start getting bumped off. Of course, they don't actually get bumped off.
Whole lot of
But that's a whole other thing. But I mean, like, which is, I think that's probably the only other slasher film we've really done.
No.
which is but yeah, it's that, it's,
well,
that
we've done mentality. Like four Halloweens and, you know, four nightmares. Sorry,
those don't count.
Okay, that's true. At least April Fool's Day is the early slashers that we have done. Yeah, the first and second wave ones.
Yeah, but the Burning, movies like The Burning and April Fool's Day are I think are the more pure slashers,
right.
Whereas Halloween was you know, a franchise.
Yeah.
You know, like there's something mass produced about them that I think The Burning and April Fool's Day don't quite have.
Right.
And that's, I think, is what people get nostalgic for, is that sort of weird thing.
And they remember the things that they like. They remember the Tom Savini special effects. They remember, you know, the boat massacre. They remember, they probably remember the shower scene. Let's be honest. A lot of people really like that scene. The outdoor shower scene. Yeah.
There's quite a bit of nudity in this movie,
right. But they don't remember all the stuff that's just kind of eh.
Yeah. Like Holly Hunter standing on a rock yelling goodbye for like 5 minutes.
Right.
You know, there's a bunch of characters just standing on a rock waving, and it goes on forever.
Right.
So it's sort of like this really awkward, occasionally spirited proto slasher film.
Right.
And that's all has value. But to me, I still think, and again, if you wanted to talk controversial, Sam, I sometimes really do believe they've made them better as time goes on.
Yeah.
And I think that we see better films now than we did then.
Because now, they had to, they've already set out the baseline and they have to actually, you know, stretch to actually do good storytelling inside of them. Yeah.
You are correct.
Right.
Yes. You can't really make a grindhouse movie anymore because there's no such thing as a grindhouse movie anymore. There already was a grindhouse.
Like, I would put this more with, like, you know, The Prowler or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
A lot of those other, you know, April Fool's Day was, you know, above its pay grade, in a lot of ways.
I agree. You know, this is like up there with like He Knows You're Alone,
right?
And Don't Answer the Phone, and Don't Enter the Woods,
Don't go up on the roof or whatever.
Yeah, you know, don't
go in the compromise
to the bathroom. Right. Don't go to the bathroom at your mom's house. Yeah. I don't know, whatever. But yeah,
did you know that the guy who I looked at the IMDb's and the guy who played Glacier was actually in Lost? I guess in one of the episodes.
Oh really?
Who he was play? He was the customs official, I guess, in one of the episodes.
Customs official.
I don't know. Okay. I thought maybe you would know.
I'm sure it was I'm sure it's a transformative role.
It's probably like, I don't know, John Locke's getting on the plane and they're like, "Hey, check your bags. I'm Glacier from The Burning. How you doing?"
Yeah, probably, yeah. Yeah, he had a bunch. He was the wrestling promoter in Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, look at that career. Yeah, he did. He did quite a bit of stuff, but yeah, all of them did. I mean, like, there's a lot of people in this movie that went on to greater things, and I think that's, if anything, if there's something that I think is truly appealing about The Burning, it's watching all of these people who would go on to do bigger and better things,
or even in horror movies that we've done in general. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, character actors just starting out, and you know, a couple of big actors just starting out, like, you know, Jason Alexander, Holly Hunter, and Paul Rudd, and, you know, yada yada.
Yeah.
That's kind of the fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think to me, that's the funnest thing about still to this day, I've seen the film probably four times, and still the most fun is this, like, holy, I can't believe that's Holly Hunter.
Right. Yeah.
So that's, so that, I guess, is my final thought on The Burning.
I would agree.
It's a really interesting novelty, with a lot of talent. Also, we didn't even talk about the score.
Oh, for the guy from Yes, Rick Wakeman.
Yeah, the guy from Yes, Rick Wakeman. Yeah, and he worked with Bowie, David Bowie.
The director because the director used to do like concert films. Like he did like a concert film for Genesis and one about the 1976 Winter Olympics that Rick Wakeman helped do the music for, and that's how they knew each other. But Rick Wakeman, they offered to give him points on the film, and he's like, "No, you can just pay me up front."
Yeah, yeah.
Good choice.
Good choice. Yeah, the film didn't do well. Right. Supposedly, the director was offered a chance to do The Burning 2, and he turned it down.
Right. It did okay.
Because of the, yeah.
It was a film, even the director had said it in there, that it was a film that was made to sell to distributors. It's not a film that they're going to watch the box office that closely. They want to sell it, you know, to people in Greece and Italy and stuff like that, and just say, do what you want with it, and then whatever it makes the States is just gravy, you know?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But it helped build Miramax, so cool, you know?
Yeah,
cool, cool. Well, depends on if you're talking about the films that Miramax came out with or the people that are work there.
That's very true. Yeah. Miramax, of course, would later on go on to be a big deal in the early 90s after the Sundance 1991 class of, you know, where they basically scooped up Tarantino, Spike Lee, Kevin Smith, and Robert Rodriguez, and redefined independent filmmaking, and gave independent filmmaking a huge boost in the arm where they were getting distributed by major studios.
Yeah, for the first, basically the first time ever. I mean,
yeah, yeah, it was the first time any major studio was ever going to look at guys who made a movie for, you know, $100,000.
right.
So yeah, so I mean, there is that. That's a very positive thing. So there's something that The Burning can partially take credit for.
Yep.
That helped put Miramax out there, made them a little bit of money. Years later, they would then, you know, boost independent filmmaking, and then do terrible, terrible things.
Right.
And so, just with that cheery thought, we will say again, thank you very much for listening. We really love doing this, and we're so glad that we're growing a little bit.
Yep.
We're getting good. We're getting good feedback on those trading card things
you've
been doing.
I'm glad to hear it.
It's killing it. Didn't one of your friends even say, like, hey, where can I buy these? And we were like, never.
Right.
Not only, and you had mentioned, like, it would probably be too expensive to make them, and I was actually thinking, like, it's appropriated artwork, guys.
Right, yeah.
You know, one of them is literally a picture of Paul Rudd. I mean, like,
we can't sell movies.
However,
stills.
I thought of a way around it, but we wouldn't get anything out of it. But fair use if for charity.
Right.
Maybe. But
even
but,
then,
so,
I'd
I mean,
be
hey,
like,
yeah, well, hey, so if you really like them, if you're listening to this and you really, really like trading cards, give a shot
please.
At us.
Please let me know if you like them. I don't know how to deal with praise. I think that's obvious, but thank you very much to you, Nathaniel, and to everybody else who said that they love it.
I love them. I think they're making us look way more professional.
And then,
I dig that.
And they're going to have to like come and listen to me talk, and they're like, oh, so this – never mind. I'll just look at the cards.
Yeah. But no, I think they're great, and it's making us look professional, and I think it's really awesome. So so all that
Thank
original
you.
Artwork,
our
new logo is Sam made that. So all of that's really kick ass. But yeah, so thank you very much for listening, for following along on this ride with us. We really appreciate it. Tell your friends, tell your priest, tell your therapist, tell whomever. Listen to that, The Devil's Ball. We could always use more support. So, but we appreciate the support we've got and the nice words we have heard. So thank you very much. And we remind you to keep it positive, keep it constructive. I hope we didn't rip on The Burning too much. I think we ultimately tried to be positive and constructive with this.
There's a lot I like about it. There's a lot I like.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. It's a fairly forgettable.
It's a flawed movie, but it's a fun movie.
It ain't Meatballs.
Yes.
But, you know, although I would have liked this movie better if Todd had been yelling, it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Right. It just doesn't matter because they have all the money.
Right. I'm going to go watch Wet Hot American Summer, I think, tomorrow because, you know, that's one of my favorite camp movies ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And so next week we'll be continuing our unhappy
campers.
Somewhere in the middle. Unhappy campers.
Yep.
Unhappy campers theme with another camp-based horror flick.
Yep.
And so thank you very much. Good night and namaste.
Oh,